Chapter 47 Interlopers. Unconsciousness had been momentary, but when Hecht came back around, the preacher was gone. He staggered, rising then falling against the wall and holding on to it for support as he regained some autonomy over his body. It was not just his body that had betrayed him, though. His mind had also been compromised. Two personalities shared the same psyche and vied for dominance. He was Caspian Hecht, and he was Barthuza Narek. Their objectives so closely aligned that whatever neural conditioning he had received had misfired and left him in this schizophrenic state. Kor Galek had seen it, and the revelation of that when confronted by Hecht's conscious mind had briefly broken him. However hard he tried as either Narek or Hecht, he could not remember what had been done to him, or what deeply buried imperative he had been given to enact. He remembered his reflection and how it had looked strange and yet utterly congruous at the same time. He knew he had a mission and had always known. Only the nature of it eluded him. "I am Caspian Hecht," he murmured aloud, but didn't find the words convincing. "I serve Lord Malkador as his knight-errant. I..." "No, you are Narek of the Word," his inner monologue told him, but even that rang hollow. A pool of blood lingered, bled from a gash in his head left when Kor Galek had struck him. He regarded his reflection in it again, the noble features, the subtle adjustment to his physiognomy, the bleaching of flesh to render a blank canvas bereft of Colchisian script. He saw the chirurgeon's marks, discerned the cuts and grafts, the skeletal realignment and muscle regrowth. "I am remade," he thought. A mystery remained, though, one that pertained to his purpose. It was murky, as if overlapped by a film of memory that almost aligned with a previous impulse, but was still fractionally out of sync and distorted like the blurring of deteriorated sight. "I am Barthuza Narek," he said aloud, although the face no longer matched the name, and with its utterance, his purpose was revealed to him. His mission: to kill a Primarch. Narek took up his fallen sword. Malkador's lackeys had failed. Heading after Kor Galek, he knew what he had to do. Kor Galek left the corpses of the two legionaries in his wake as he searched for an obvious way to breach the sanctum. Through the murky glass he could see the casket of the Lord of Drakes, but had yet to lay eyes on the Fulgurite. Again he felt the psychic tether pull at his soul and knew he was running out of time. The door to the sanctum was little impediment in itself. Sealed and reinforced, it would deter most explosives and even hold up against magna cutters for a while. But material obstacles posed no barrier to one who could move by immaterial means. Ingress meant siphoning off a further portion of his strength, a tightening of the noose around his soul, the very thing he had wagered even to get aboard the ship. But before this last bargain could be struck, there was another impediment that must be overcome. Psychic wards had been carved around the doorframe, invisible to both mortal and transhuman eyes, but not to an apostle of the Word. They made for effective protection against the ritual and the arcane. Kor Galek scowled, removing his helm so he could look upon the wards without the barrier of glass lenses impeding him. It would take time to remove them. He took off a gauntlet and unsheathed a serrated knife, laid the blade hard across his palm and clenched it. He then dragged the bloodied knife across the wards and painstakingly scratched each one out, muttering canticles of desecration and unholy worship. Nothing that was could not be undone. Such was the will of chaos. Alone, Numeon realized he was vulnerable, but he hoped he would bypass the sirens unnoticed, at least until he reached the sanctum. Calling up a schematic of the ship, he blink-clicked for diagnostic reports, including the hermetic integrity of Vulcan's resting place. Still secure. There was some relief in that. A sudden tremor shook the hull, throwing Numeon to his knees. He grimaced as a spike of pain shot up his leg. Groaning armor plate from the Charybdis's exterior sounded through the hull. Each successive blow was slowly taking the ship apart. Another hard impact slammed Numeon against the deck. A third hurled him into the wall. Frenetic light flicker indicated an imminent power outage. Klaxons kept up their cacophony of shrieking. Numeon bit his tongue to focus, shrugging off the dizziness. He grabbed fistfuls of dangling wires and latched onto every internal protruding buttress, hauling his way across the deck. An icon flashed up urgently on his retinal display. A vertical conveyor that led to the lower decks and the sanctum was situated nearby. In a second, the reading went from secure to in danger of imminent breach. Vulcan! Could he trust what he was seeing? He decided he could not afford not to. Numeon took the conveyor. Thundering down the conveyor shaft, Numeon held the rail as the carriage shuddered. As the air rushed past, feelings of guilt began to manifest. He had left Zetos and the others to face horror alone. He had forsaken brothers for father, a body lying in stasis. He crushed down the feeling, knowing it was the siren's influence, or perhaps just the unnatural distemper created by the storm. Either way, Numeon's mind was stronger. He mastered his emotions, cleaving to his purpose and his duty. "Rise for us now, Vulcan," he whispered, his voice stolen by the urgency of his descent. Reaching the lowest deck of this part of the ship, Numeon wrenched open the cage and hurried to the sanctum. The lower decks were empty, and the ship resounded to the drumming of his footfalls. As he neared the door to the sanctum, he realized he was not alone, even though he had met no one on the way there. Not only that, but Numeon had been lured to this place. "She is here." Kor Galak erased the last of the wards, his face awash with feverish sweat. The exertion came from holding on, from the tether heaving at his soul. He had sunk to his knees to remove the final protective sigil, and it took effort to rise again. He reached for his discarded helm, but decided to leave it behind. The close metal confines would only stifle what little breath he had. Marshalling his strength, he uttered a further incantation and stepped through the door as if it were as incorporeal as mist. The warp had bled over the ship, not enough for an incursion of any significance, but sufficient for Kor Galak to pass through solid adamantium and emerge into the sanctum. Reverently, for this was still a Primarch before him, Kor Galak removed the lid to Vulcan's sarcophagus. He slid it aside just enough so he could reach the fulgurite. Even to Kor Galak's practiced eye, the Lord of Drakes appeared deep in preternatural slumber. Vulcan gripped the haft of a huge hammer laid across his chest, and the scalloped armor that clad his body was funereal. They were taking him to his final rest, burning him to ash in the fires of their world. Cor Gallic was no authority on the customs of other legions, but he knew enough to realize that this was what the salamanders were planning. His eyes strayed to the prize he had long sought, that which Elias had squandered. Impaled like the blood-drinking Striganoi of myth or the kingmaker of Albion fable, breathed Cor Gallic, recalling Terran legends of night-haunting fiends and stone kings of old. Awed by the sight of the artifact now within his reach, he hesitated before he touched it. I wonder which you are closer to. His fingertips brushed the end of the spear, then, as he grew more confident, wrapped around the haft. He felt nothing, and frowned, unsure of what he had expected. Narek had claimed to have received an epiphany. Truth, he had said. Eyes opened. Perhaps, Cor Gallic thought, he had already opened his eyes. He did wonder how this cold piece of uninspiring stone could lay low a Primarch. To see it now, it seemed incredible. In spite of his doubts, he could not resist pulling on the spear. Unsurprisingly, it did not yield. Snorting in derision, he released the haft and instead drew the Asirnoff knife. Whether it was the essence of one Primarch reacting to the other or something else, the blade seemed to vibrate in Cor Gallic's hand. Destiny, now so imminent, caused his heart to thunder. He raised the knife above his head, vaguely aware of another presence in the corridor outside the sanctum. It didn't matter. He was too close now to be stopped. The Fulgurite would be his. And with it, he would... Cor Gallic convulsed as the immense psychic presence he had felt closing on the Charybdis suddenly came into being. There was only enough time for the slightest cut to claim but a sliver of what he actually wanted. Snarling with frustration, he released the tether and the sanctum faded, replaced by a blinding light. The little girl in the ragged white dress, all alone, stood barefoot in Numeon's path. Between the strands of her tumble-down hair, he caught a glimpse of malicious, inhuman eyes. Too large, too black, they beckoned him, unblinking.
She cuts out the other eye.
Numeon brandished Drokoros and smiled.
It cuts out your demon heart.
Then his smile faded, usurped first by grief and then anger as he saw the slain. Orn and Rand were dead, each impaled on the other's blade, turned by some primordial evil that Numeon did not understand but now accepted as real. Superstition versus science. Enlightenment proven false before the evidence of the arcane and the eldritch. It had turned Horus, he who was meant to be the best of them. What chance had Orn and Rand had against that? And yet Numeon still resisted. Others resisted, his father amongst them. A grim darkness had been revealed by this war, but it was not without its bastions of light. And in that small moment of revelation, Numeon knew one thing for certain. Vulcan had to return.
Step aside, wretch!
He bared his teeth behind a mask that had fangs of its own. The girl smiled coyly. She had fangs, too, to go with her talons.
Sacred is six, and six is sacred,
she said shrilly in a sing-song voice. Numeon's boldness took a back step as five more sirens emerged from dark alcoves and shadows where there had previously been nothing but air. He raised the sigil, holding it out before him, and felt emboldened.
"I am sending you back to the ether," he promised. "Now get away from my father."
The sisters seemed to hesitate at the sight of the Primarch's icon, clenched so vehemently by one of such belief. For a moment, Numeon dared to hope it might shield him long enough to reach Vulcan.
"She cuts off his hand, she kills the father."
The sirens drifted closer as one, their tiny feet making no sound against the deck as they moved. Numeon gave Drokoros a practice swing to loosen his wrist and shoulder. Its teeth whistled as they carved through air.
"Blind and one-handed, I would still defy!"
His words stuck in his mouth. The sisters had stopped moving. Everything had. Even the dust motes cascading through shafts of phosphor light had ceased. Condensation dripping off the pipes, smoke rising from the vents, sparks flaring from shorting wires, all in stasis. His beating heart like a drum, his breathing a thunderous report, Numeon drank in the quietude and tried to understand why he could still move. Realization was not long coming.
"You are lost, Artellus," a voice uttered, brittle and rasping.
A figure stood before the door of the sanctum, too large for a legionary. A Primarch. Numeon fought the urge to kneel as an incredible sense of immense power and potency fell upon him. He dared to hope, but saw that hope quickly dashed as the Primarch stepped from the shadows, or perhaps willed himself to appear. Bronze skin, flaking to a rough patina of oxidized green. Armor of baked leather, cracked and split. A staff, clutched in thin fingers, gnarled and twisted. Limbs, brittle, colonized by sharp protrusions. One eye, the other a cruel slit cut between scar tissue. The Cyclops.
"Beyond all reach, except mine."
Arrogant, omniscient, Magnus the Red.